My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
Oh, yeah. You were supposed to be here. Fine.
All right, whatever.
Whatever?
Wow.
Whatever?
Miles, being Spider-Man is a sacrifice.
You have a choice between saving one person and saving every world.
Send me home.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane.
You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
We've been waiting almost 5 years for an invitation to rejoin Miles Morales in the Spider-Verse. But this time, we're going all the way across the Spider-Verse. I'm Brian Gill, joined by the two most important movie podcasters in my life, my co-host, Kate Garrison, Richard Martin. How's it going, folks?
I was surprised it was us.
Just movie podcasts.
Did you get in trouble with Fantasy and Chris Ryan?
Yeah, they went back and listened to some of the other Spread the Floor episodes, and I'm not allowed back.
It happens.
The Ringer Friends anymore. That's fine.
It feels weird to go to a comic book movie that's not DC or MCU related.
A Pascal joint, if you will.
It's kind of one of these, yeah. One of Pascal, these odd, outside the barriers of the canon that people get really pissed off about. This seems to be one of those, so that's good. We don't want to piss anyone off by talking about the thing you love the most in a negative way.
It's true. It's true. It's nice to do this. And we'll get a chance to do that in a couple weeks, probably. So
sure. We tuned. All, hey, that's the mainly what the show is, so.
That's right.
It's mad about that should be what it's called. Kind of just it should just be called Movie Reviews, talking about the things you love in a negative way.
We are always a few weeks away from either a DC or a Marvel movie at all times. Yeah. Since 2012 or so.
It's true. They're always lurking.
They have it their way. It'd be every weekend.
Whopper, 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 whopper. There you have that in my head.
It's good.
What's up, gents? Spider-Verse is... I can't believe it had been 5 years. That was my first thought.
Yeah.
I thought this felt like 3 years. But I was thinking the other day, I have a wedding anniversary coming up or something, and I don't know, one of the women I'm married to, and it's gotten to the point since the pandemic where it all feels like 1 year. I don't know if you guys are there, but like, if, I'm like, it feels like March 2020 was a year ago, and it wasn't. It was over three.
Just a very long, tedious, brutal year. Yeah, I'm with you.
With that math, this was 3 years ago or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
This one was supposed to come out last year, though, right? Last summer or
it
something?
Was October, I think.
Last October? Year. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of that was realizing fully that this was a two-parter, not an individual entry followed by, I don't know totally the timeline on that. Somebody could probably educate me on that, but I think that was a little bit of it, and I think part of it was just finishing the animation because it's not the normal animated style. You know,
I was thinking that kind of along those lines, that why they delayed it is like, guys, it's not done rendering. Push it back.
Yeah.
It's just like, this file is huge. You know, it's, I mean, just looking at this thing, the amount of just different elements in every frame has to just take, I mean, years to render. Maybe.
Unbelievable, unbelievable achievement on that. Before we talk about Across the Spider-Verse, I want to, or before we review the movie, I should say, I want to kind of, since it has been 5 years, get a reminder of where you guys stood on the original entry into the Spider-Verse in December of 2018. And then we're going to talk just briefly about the business side of this thing, too. I loved Into the Spider-Verse. I don't totally remember where it ended up in my top 10 that year, but it was very close to the top. It's a movie I've revisited several times. My kid loves, I think that's not true. I was about to say all Spider-Man movies, but he would be furious if I put on the amazing Spider-Man movies. He does not care for the Andrew Garfield version, but loves Spider-Verse.
When he stormed out of the theater in this one then, right?
What's his reasoning is, why don't 10-year-olds like that? Just the vibe? Yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, it's a... Because he really digs Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man in No Way Home. I think that he really enjoyed that bit. When he was younger, he would watch the Raimi Spider-Man movies quite a bit. Even three. You know, when you're five, the Spider-Man 3 isn't nearly as bad as it is when you get a little bit older.
But when you're six, it's awful.
Yeah, yeah. Then he grew up. You know? Yeah. Got to kindergarten and...
Yeah.
I was wondering where he got those dance
moves. Conversation on the playground shamed him.
The guy from effing Wings? Are you serious?
That's right. That's right. But I don't know. Every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, you want to... Because, I mean, you'll know this soon, Richard, and any parent who's listening to this, it's like your kid will hyperfixate on something, some kind of piece of media. And even if you love that piece of media, you're like, all right, we got to do something different. Like, got to cycle in something different here. But I would like, hey, what about these? And he'd be like, not into it. Loves the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies and loves Spider-Verse. So I loved that movie. I think that I've actually... Whatever grade I gave it in 2018, I would say it's probably a half letter grade higher even. I think it's a really great movie, and I love the animation and everything. So that's where I came into all of this. Kent, the only thing I remember about your review was having a hard time. You said it was an assault on your eyes.
That's the only thing anyone remembers, apparently. That's funny. No, I enjoyed Into the Spider-Verse a lot. Loved the story. Thought like this is the most interesting take on Spider-Man maybe ever.
Sure.
So I love the approach for this type of reboot. It was one of my most anticipated that year because I'd seen the trailer and I was like, wow, this is something different. This is an animation style unlike anything I've seen. If they do this right, this could be really special. But my eyes never really adjusted to the animating on twos thing that they did with certainly the first half of Into the Spider-Verse, which I went back and watched, mainly the stuff with Miles in school and really the setup or stuff around the city. If it's 24 frames in a second, the characters are only animated 12 frames of every second. It's a trick to give it a different effect, basically, but it's a stylistic thing, and my eyes never really... I adjusted to that in the first half of that. So by the time the second half came around, my eyes were just so tired that I couldn't handle it. This one, you know, people in the Discord chimed in today in one of our channels saying that, once Miles gets older, the animation gets smoother. That's a stylistic thing. That makes sense, but my eyes didn't love that stylistic choice at the outset, but this one I did not have any issues with. I actually sat really close to the screen too and thought that was going to be a problem, but ended up not having an issue with it at all. So
nice. You and Chris Nolan, front row, right?
Went and saw this in Dolby Vision. Nice. There were people saying, I don't know if you had a problem, Richard or Brian, that people saying they had an issue with the sound mix, couldn't hear it, or it ruined an experience for me because I couldn't hear the dialogue. I had no issues with that. I don't know if I was in the minority, but maybe seek out the Dolby Vision if you had an issue with that, because Dolby is a sound company. So I think the sound is probably going to be the one thing that's going to be great there in that aspect. But looked really good. I actually popped in the theater next to mine when I walked out to see what it looked like in non-Dolby Vision. Man, Dolby Vision looked way better. Like it was... vast difference in how the image quality. I was actually pretty surprised. I guess it's kind of worth the upcharge.
Sure. Okay. Richard, 2018, Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. Don't remember where you were at with it. And if
your guess is as good as mine. Yeah. Okay. I don't think I hated it because I was excited for this. I remembered none of it. And then it came back to me as I watched this. Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't like cartoons really as much as you guys do. And I know it's like animated films and is not the proper term, but they're a cartoon. In general, like even good ones, I don't like that much. So I'm like the worst audience for this. Do love Spider-Man. Interesting. The idea of verses, multiverse-y stuff was still relatively not beaten down yet on the first one.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was a demerit. That was kind of cool and fun. All I remembered was Spider-Pig, flying around, seeing all these different Spider-Men. And then with this one, I came in. I
forgot about Spider-Pig, man. They should have brought that back. That was a great bit.
I love the Renaissance one, though, with Yorma, though, made up for it.
That was fun.
Yorma was greatest.
Yeah. He's great in the first one, too. He's he just put him in something funny in this every time. But anyway, sorry. Loved. So I was like, as we've talked about on the show, though excited for this and think it's a really cool universe. I'm so multiversed out.
Spider-Pig is from the Simpsons movie. I should say that.
Yeah.
That's true.
We need to get that in this. How about that? Spider-Pig. Spider-Pig.
Peter Porker. The only apprehension I had, I trust Lord Miller. I trust, you know, everyone involved in this. In like that they're doing a sequel, I think it certainly warranted it, but I'm like, this is, I have such tired head on multiverses in general through no fault of this particular multiverse. So it was not like that, like kind of dimmed my excitement. Cause it was like, okay, I get to go in and watch a freaking math problem for 2 hours. Fun. But you know, immediately charming and wonderful, and they make such sense of it. And it seems so unique to this, and they overdo it to the point, you know, it's the bit of a little bit of something's annoying, but that if you bust through that wall, it like comes back around as interesting or funny again. They do that with multiverse. There's so much multiverse in this that it like becomes you're numb to how annoying multiverses are, at least my particular way. And it's so central to this, right? It's that's what this is about. Whereas it's not just a MacGuffin to like bring someone back or whatever.
Yeah, so, it's not a gimmick. Yeah.
So it totally works in this. Loved it. I think I like this one more than the first. It made me want to rewatch the first, which, as you guys know, I'm not a big rewatcher these days. But yeah, I just came out of it a little bit ago, and it's such a, you know, I'm not a particularly visual person, but it's such an aesthetic joy, this movie. So, you know, it's a little long, but I you know, the old Richard Barden watch check, it's what, like probably what, 2 hours and 15 minutes or so, somewhere in there?
Yeah, 220, I think.
220.
It was that long? Really, wow, it didn't feel that long to me. It felt like two, maybe.
I've started thinking this is a little long, checking my watch at like 2 hours. So like that's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
It's sometimes that's at like hour five. Yeah. No, I loved it. It was great. I wanted to circle back. I know you want to talk. I think you want to talk a little bit about the Sony business part of this or something. You tease something and then we start talking about
it. We can get
about
into it as we go. No problem. This is an organic conversation. I like it.
I don't like those. Like everything we plan, as you guys know,
our writers are on strike.
I script it. Said, so. Yeah, they're on strike, but we did meet. We broke. We're scabby dudes, and we got together. And we
got on Fiverr,
including this part.
I'm with you. I mean, I think there's a conversation there about recycling stuff in general in these movies. I mean, we're seeing it across the board with the MCU, with the DCEU. I mean, this is the first time I've seen the Flash trailer was in this screening, and it's just like, how many characters can we cram into it that are nostalgic? And that seems to be the approach on a lot of these. Like, I think the story itself should be the sell, and not like, oh, did you know Michael Keaton pops up, or did you know Tobey Maguire's back, or that might come get you to see it, right? So I'm just kind of sick of that entire bit, and I'm ready for it to go away forever.
Yeah, I could use a break. Yeah, multiverse stuff. We've done that a lot. We've done that a lot lately, and we've done it a lot with our superhero comic book movies. And so that, I think that it doubles the multiverse fatigue when you also have some built in, even, you know, I love big budget blockbuster movies. I think broad audiences are kind of have some, I mean, we've seen that with the box office and whatnot, have some comic book fatigue and maybe a lot of comic book fatigue. So I think that like redoubles the feeling with the multiverse bit too, when you're just like, oh, okay.
With all of this like de-aging and deep fake stuff, how far away is Vin from being like, what if in the next one we steal a time machine? You know, that just seems to be, okay, if we can bring a time machine, a multiverse into it, that's a cheat for basically 10 more movies of storylines. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
I think you can do multiverse and going back in time without doing the dumb bit of, you know, bringing back the fan service-y type stuff. I think, you know, Back to the Future did it, right? So
I think what I worry about from a Hollywood business perspective, because we say a lot, it usually takes Hollywood 3 or 5 years to figure something out that is pretty obvious in the moment. Because this did incredibly well. This made $120 million domestically. That's the second biggest open of the year so far, behind Super Mario Brothers. I think that the first one did $35 million opening weekend. So this is a huge, huge boom from where it was, from where the first one was.
How much did the first one make overall?
Three-ish.
That's it?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, it was an incredibly successful movie, because for a while it was like 100% of Rotten Tomatoes, and I think wound up in the 375 worldwide.
How much do you think has to do with people obviously checking this out during the pandemic and, you know, coming across it over the past 4 years, and how well received the last Spider-Man movie was?
I think the last one there was, yeah.
The Marvel one I'm talking about.
Right. No Way Home we like to give, everyone I think likes to give credit to Top Gun, but that really was the first pandemic movie that just crushed and kind of was like, all right. People went to see that movie that hadn't seen a movie in literally like 19 months, you know, 20 months. And it was a huge, huge deal. So yes, there's some of that. Spider-Man is just sort of a bankable, likable character. This franchise in and of itself, like this branch of the Spider-Man universe, is fun and really energetic, and it's, you know, it attracts all ages to the theater and stuff, and so there's that. But like, my point on the multiverse thing, just to wrap that up, is this is incredibly successful. Doctor Strange was hugely successful last year. The Flash, I think, is probably going to be pretty successful here in a couple of weeks. And I think that those movies are really closer to being outliers than they are, like more exceptions to the rule than they are the rule when it comes to multiverse. So I think we're going to get a lot more multiverse stuff over the next couple of years, as Hollywood's like, No Way Home made a ton of money. Doctor Strange made a ton of money. The Flash made a ton of money. This is what people want.
Yeah, they'll learn the wrong lesson from this.
Yes. Absolutely. It's really about the stories that are being told here. The Flashes would be sort of the outlet. Even The Flash, I think, has A, DC movies do really well the first two weekends, and B, I think that there's some dread, intrigue, and some excitement.
I think that's going to be, from what I've heard, like a pretty good movie compared to what else the direct they put out, which is the low bar, but like I think that's going to be one that the DC verse fans, like, I don't mean DC fans, but like fans of that this particular cinematic universe, are going to be like, see, like,
well,
great. Congrats.
I think maybe it'll probably be a pretty good movie, but I'm wondering if in the way that, like, towards the end of, like, before they rebooted Transformers, how the masses kind of revolted on those and were just like, nope, we're done with these, and they just didn't make as much as anyone thought. I'm wondering how far this can go, how many trailers they can release, like, remember this character, another, you know, the Blue Beetle trailer, I saw that one too. That's another one. It's like, oh, you're asking us to buy into another complete franchise. This, I'm like, we gotta,
and I know that's like an original DC character, but I don't know who that is. Like, I'm, as a non-comic book person, like, I had to Google that. So it's not exactly like that has built in things like Batman, like an audience, like, okay, yeah.
I'm wondering when the bit is gonna be old for the masses, and they're like, you know what, I'm tired of this bit, and I'm not gonna go see this. it might not be this year, might not be next year, but I'll be very interested to see what that movie is going to be. Zack Snyder's not making these anymore. Like, normally I would say, just wait for the next one of his, and then these will be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. Brian, did you listen to the Affleck Smartless?
I haven't yet. No.
Yeah.
No.
The two funny things about it, about this, he goes, they said something about The Flash, and he says, like, literally with this one, he goes, that movie's good. Like, he was blown away, which was funny to me.
I don't know if you were on the pod, Richard, but we said Cruz saw it and said it was like the best movie he's ever seen.
Yeah. He was like, I don't know. He's good. And he goes, and then the other funny Affleck thing goes, leave it to me. He goes, they cut me out of Batman. I finally figured out how to play the guy. It's like, he's like, literally on the last day, I was like, oh, I get it. Which was funny. But yeah, he was like, I just saw it. But it was so funny. The tone in his voice was like, after like having to sit through the paychecks of these Snyder movies, he was just like, that movie's good. Yeah. he was as mystified as anyone.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. Okay.
And a great star.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's dig into this movie. You mentioned you got the Dolby experience. I did get the opposite of that. I got, oh crap, the movie came out. We got to buy tickets. Crap. Every single theater's close to us at a good time is sold out.
Shout out to the AMC A-List app on that one. I've been, for some of these bigger ones, like the Indiana Jones, Oppenheimer, I just bought this past week. I'm buying them in advance because I'm not trying to sit them. And still, I sat in the front.
Star Wars. Yeah.
And I bought it like 3 weeks
ago. Star Wars opening night. I haven't ever had to do that, but I'm getting close to it because part of it is just like I've always had the ability to just be like, I'm just going to see it at Tuesday at 10 o'clock, you know, if I need to, that's fine. But now my kid wants to go see all these movies. So you got to find a kid appropriate time that works for his schedule.
And none of these theaters have stadium seating anymore. They all have these giant recliners. So that's just less seats.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
To get. You can just fit like 500 people in one of those. Now it's like you have four recliners on a row.
Yeah. They're all smaller. I had to go see it at the theater that used to be the Alamo near my house, over here on Davis. It's now like a B&B theaters, and I hate it. I hate this theater so much. I think this is like the third time, and all three times, I'm like, no, I'm never coming back.
The Alamo Draft House that opened like literally January of 2020, I think.
Pretty close. It was Memorial Day of 2019. Because we took, or close to, because we took Coop to see Aladdin there, and sick. It had just opened, and he broke his arm in the bounce house that they had, like, outside the grand opening theater, and, you know, bounce house and all this stuff, so.
Which one is it? Where is it?
It was on Davis and North Tarrant.
Oh, I went to a movie there with you.
Yeah, I think so. Alamo, it was awesome, but it lasted literally a year.
Oh, the Alamo went under, COVID. Okay.
Yeah.
So now Alamo just abandoned the location, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tenet was like the only movie I saw that entire year in a theater. And that was really a good experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. I forgot about that. I didn't realize that Alamo went under. It shows how hip I am to things.
I miss it.
I saw it at a strip center, Rio Doso, New Mexico theater. So I probably won.
I've been there. Yeah.
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 But it was empty. So it was fine. It was like me and three other vaguely disinterested people.
Yeah. No, I had weak sound. It was a little low, but I've also seen two other movies there and those movies also had bad sound. So I think it's more about the theater than it was. But I did see a lot of other people commenting on how low it is. I guess Lauren Miller even tweeted about it and just said, the mix is low or something and just go talk to her. It's mixed in a specific way, which is kind of annoying. But like,
did you see they knew
the manager and tell them to turn
they anticipated this and we're sending out stickers that said I projected it at the right dB level or something. And it had like the Across the Spider-Verse logo on it that they were giving to all the projectionists. I don't know why that is.
The film to where just the $8 an hour employee can just like hit the button. Mm-hmm. And, maybe we can do that in the future, but, regardless, it did not impact my, it wasn't like I commented last week on Little Mermaid. I felt like the mix was bad. This wasn't bad. It just was low volume. And so a couple of the characters were a little more difficult to understand than others. Like my wife has a hearing problem and she didn't go to see this with me and Coop. And I was kind of glad because I was like, I think she would the whole time be like, what did he say? Because she just couldn't, she wouldn't have been able to pick up on a couple of the characters. But overall, that was a pretty minor, more like an inconvenience, I would say, than anything else. The movie itself, let's get finally, I guess we're an hour into this thing. I love this. I thought it was really, really well done. Good. It's really hard to do a second movie of a trilogy. This even, I think, has some added difficulties in that the first one was 5 years ago and it is a true part one of a two-part movie. And that is always something that is difficult to pull off without the audience leaving the theater feeling like it's an incomplete thing and an incomplete picture. And, I think that it pulled that off for the most part really well. These movies have like Pixar level heart to me, but done in a really organic, sweet way. Like the interactions between Miles and his parents in both of these movies, this one maybe even in particular, are really great and feel real in a movie about a whole bunch of people who got bit by a radioactive spider, you know? And I really dig that. I also think the other thing, and then I'll turn it over to you guys and just kind of get general thoughts, was there's an understanding here, and I think this is part of why these movies kind of trump some of the others when it comes to this multiverse fatigue stuff, is like they really understand that this should be fun and that you should use the multiverse for fun as much as possible and less for we got to bring characters back from the dead and crazy
right, less for plot points. The plot's not necessarily revolving. The characters coming out of that aren't like main, really main characters. They're kind of, yeah. I get what you're saying.
So that's really well done. And so these are just super fun to sit and watch. The dialogue is smart and quick and the characters are all really well put together, really well written and structured. The voice talent that they get is great. But I think the big thing is like these are just really fun movies, and they use that stuff very well to enhance that feeling of fun. But I had a great time with this, and I will see. We'll get into deeper thoughts here in a second, but. I don't know if you guys have, we sort of had touched on your general thoughts, but if you have anything else to go with there, and then we can get into more of the deeper thoughts here. Kent, go to you first on this.
For me, it really goes back to the men at the helm here, Lord and Miller. Hmm. I mean, these guys are incredible. I mean, when's the last time we really had auteur creatives? Two people or a person who really just has like a unique vision and voice dedicate themselves to animation. I think maybe Tim Burton in a way, obviously Walt Disney, you know, John Lasseter maybe in the early days was kind of, but he wasn't making other movies. It's just a really interesting thing that we got two people that could do anything, and they have proven that they can with the 22 Jump Street, 21 Jump Street, and their TV work. But I love that they see value in animation and see like, oh no, we can really push this further as a medium. Mm. Not everything that can be done has been done. And they seem like, I was trying to go back and see what they majored in. I couldn't really find it, but they seem like just art geeks. The level of realism in like the graffiti culture aspect of these movies is really interesting to me. I mean, it's something that obviously they're interested in, but like, I don't know, it's done not in a Dallas Mavericks way. Let's just say that of like, let's just throw graffiti on places and call it a day. Like there's actual like value and like they see that as an art form, especially in Into the Spider-Verse where Miles is like tagging and his dad's a cop, right? Like there's some really interesting commentary there on like, you know, is street art art and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, this one just doubled down on like stylistically, we can seek inspiration from all of these unique and incredible things of the past and pay homage to that while also pushing something forward. Right.
Right.
And what really stuck out to me as well about their other movies with this movie is their reliance on skeuomorphic design, which I know that's a big word, but it really just means like things are designed to look real. For example, in the Lego movie, the Legos look like real Legos, right? In this movie, it looks like real paper. It looks like real ink. It looks like real cutout characters, right? I loved that commitment to, oh, this is a comic book movie? How about we base the design
on comic books?
Like, that's pretty simple when you think about it, but it goes so far if you do it correctly and you lean right into what makes a comic book great. Why do we love comic books? And what about that can we emphasize here? I just think, I mean, story-wise, obviously, these hit home. They have heart. I mean, the family aspect, the Spider-Man aspect is great. but like this movie could be on mute and it would still be like extremely valuable to me as like a something to show to animation students or what have you. And I think maybe Mitchell's versus the Machines and the experience making that helped with this. Cause I see a lot of the inspiration comedically and kind of how they time things out with that, I loved, which was in my top 10 of that year. Super underrated if you haven't seen that one, but it just stuck out to me how talented, I mean, they wrote this movie, you know, and this is them. how talented these guys are.
Yeah, that's great. It's great. It's a great point. And I respect greatly. I mean, this is something that Jordan Peele does really well. I think Spielberg has done it well in his career. There are other great examples of it too. But knowing how to produce and executive produce a picture, a movie, instead of always being writer director, I think is a great skill to be able to.
How do I delegate your vision to other, download it into others so we get more of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think good points all around.
They're a lot older than I thought. They're 47.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
I thought they were like kind of 40, late. But they started early. They started in 2000 with Clone High, which they've rebooted, by the way, and it's back.
That. Yeah, that's true. Richard, what about you? Where are we at? General thoughts, and then just take us where you'd like to go.
Yeah, no, I loved it. So you have all these different types of universes, look, feels, tones, realities, logic, everything you build in across all these different universes. But then everything, like Ken said, it comes together with this kind of general, very comic, but very elevated aesthetic that's really purposeful. The cool thing about these is that like, it's a really stupid little movie about a bunch of Spider-Man universes. Of course, that's dumb. That's not like as a concept particularly high art, but it really does push you both aesthetically and with some of the screenwriting, it really elevates to that, right? It's really drawing you as a viewer, like saying, you don't have to sit there and watch and just have this wash over you. Like, we're going to like kind of challenge your eyes, your ears, and your brain with this, which no other real... Even there are things I even have enjoyed more, but maybe I've enjoyed them more because my brain's been off or it's fired some synapse, whatever. But this is like kind of in a lot of, at least for me, because you know, everyone's brain works differently. For me, it's like kind of almost like doing the Wordle or something. It's like really like trying to watch and catch and, you know, I'm watching it very like forward in my seat, like I'm scanning constantly. It's almost tiring to watch. It's not a bad way at all, but like
I know what you mean.
Not a whole lot. I'm not doing that for like Doctor Strange.
I know what you mean.
I'm back. There's popcorn. If I miss something, I miss it. Like whatever.
But
this is definitely in a cool way. I'm not saying it's to that level. It's still dumb cartoons about Spider-Man, but like I watch it. I literally, my posture is the same as when I'm watching like Oscar movies. Like, okay, what am I trying to get out? You know, which is in a cool way.
I think that the world is so engrossing that it kind of like, I know that the first one can't like, as you've said, kind of assaulted your eyeballs or whatnot, but I do think that there's something to the way that this movie's animated and these movies are animated and the attention to detail. And then when you add to that, like a really, I mean, I love the Marvel movies. I wish that they were written as well from a dialogue standpoint as these movies are. I mean, these are just really up there with as good as it gets in terms of,
realistic dialogue.
Blockbuster movies, like, gosh, the writing on these is just so good. But I think that the world is just so engrossing that that's a great point, Richard. You're kind of like always on attention with these things in a way that I'm not with other movies that, by the way, I really like, you know, and really enjoy my time with those movies. They do these, like, doing the little Easter eggs, but doing them in both ways, either where they're just like in kind of in the background, and if you miss it, you miss it, doesn't matter. But then also like doing 2 second calls to this little fun Easter egg over here, it just like makes you feel like you're in on an inside joke. But then you're also like, I want to catch the next one. And I don't know, like that's really, I don't know that you could probably do five more of these movies, and I don't know that I'm going to get tired of that. I think it's just really, really smart. And I'm not sure that I necessarily would have expected that coming into this first movie, you know, in 2018, and then to have it carried over here. It gets just, it's a really kind of a marvel that they're able to pull these things off. And I'm with you, Ken. It does go back to, this is directed very, very well. By Dos Santos, Powers, and Thompson. But the writing and the vision, I think, you know, come from Lord and Miller, at least starts there. And
it comes from them saying...
Really impressive thing.
Yeah, it comes from them being like, we're going to have this character called Spider-Punk, and they bring in the God Save the Queen artwork, and they say, this is going to be the style. Like, you know, those types of big visions on where to push the animation... makes all the difference. Gwen's world is going to be extremely pastel colors, water, very soothing on the eyes, right? Because she's this soothing presence in Miles's life. And I think the choice to push the animation in different styles too gives your eyes a break, because one aesthetic for 2 hours would be assault, I think. I think your eyes would get tired of that. So the jumping around to different worlds, I think, is a story element, but I think it's like a necessity of the production in order so that you can get through 2 hours without feeling like you just went through the ringer.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
No, and that worked. I think that made a huge difference for me with this second one. I loved all the... Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes forever to get there, but once they get to the... HQ, I think they call it in this. That was super fun with all the different, every Spider-Man you've ever seen in a movie basically is in that one. And they even do the freaking Spider-Man meme, you know, like it's everything.
Yeah.
I loved that. And it's just, it's super quick too. They know when to get in and get out of the joke. The Lego Spider-Man thing too was another example of that in this for me. Like, this thing could have stopped down for 10 or 20 minutes and just been a Lego Spider-Man movie, but they didn't do that. They, I think they know when to keep you wanting more, right? Like when to get in, get out and say, that was really cool. I wish they had more of that, right?
Yeah. The Spider HQ 2 is another good example of the kind of inside joke bit of, I, as somebody who hasn't read any Spider-Man comics or very few Spider-Man comics over the years, I know that I missed 1,000 jokes in that 20-minute, 10-minute stretch where they're in Spider HQ, and I'm okay with it because it wasn't making me feel like I'm missing something but that only the cool kids are in on, you know what I mean? Like, we all got the Spider-Man meme. There may be other little parts of Spider-Man HQ that general audiences are going to catch, and your mileage may vary just based on whatever you bring to the table as you're watching from a knowledge base standpoint. But I didn't feel like it was at all like speaking down to those of us who aren't reading all of these comics. It was just an opportunity for some people who are to catch a little bit extra, which I think was done. It's just done really well. And that's probably kind of a delicate thing to figure out. And so far, two movies in, I have had zero problems on that front. That's a cool little bonus. For the quality of this thing.
It appeals to so many levels of buy-in to an audience. Mm. Like you can enjoy this very superficially, very A plot only, cool aesthetics, cool. I know nothing about Spider. You know, probably honestly, very like where I am. You know, maybe I'm one level beyond that. Or you can be someone that's like, yeah, I know all these. I know the punk Spider Punk. You know, that kills people with guitars. Like I read that issue in a comic book store. Which that was my favorite character, by the way. But because I just kept thinking of Fred Armisen's, the punk rock guy that loves Queen Elizabeth or Margaret Thatcher. Yeah.
Ian Rubbish.
Yeah. Ian Rubbish, my all time favorite singer.
He loves the Queen. Just
no, he loves Margaret. Yeah, he loves Margaret Thatcher. Yeah. You're all right. she keeps the streets safe at night.
Kahlua is great in
Kahlua
that
was
voice,
great.
Voice role.
But I just mean, you could like already know that coming in and mm-hmm. enjoy, mm-hmm. obviously enjoy it. So it's great. Now, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, Iron Man really delivered on that. I think people that were hardcore Iron Man fans for mm-hmm. 20 years, love that character, were like maybe a little nervous. And then once they got there, like, yes, this ruled. Or people that like me that I didn't know what that was. I thought it was mm-hmm. whatever. I thought it was like the Iron Giant. came into it and was like, this rules too, you know? And so this really appeals that, even though it's operating in a very complex way mm-hmm. with a lot of things around it, it's very approachable and emotional and all the stuff that people like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are the scenes that jump out in this one? Cause this is a movie that the different segments, and especially with the different animation style and stuff like that, it leads to, at least for me, it leads to feeling like there was a lot of really cool and different. You mentioned the Spider HQ, but every setting is different here. It has a slightly different animation style. So it leads to that really stuck out in my brain as a cool place, a great scene, whatever. Whereas some of these other movies that we watch, maybe that's not necessarily the case. So can't you mention Spider HQ? Is there any other scene or setting, sequence, whatever, that jumps out as like this was the peak of the movie?
Yeah, a couple for me. It started out in a really awesome way with that drum sequence. Mm-hmm. At the beginning with Gwen, I wanted more of that. Mm-hmm. But again, they know when to get out and to leave you wanting more. So I thought that was great. I loved Moonbatten. I thought that looked incredible. I mean, I want a whole movie set there. I thought the art style mm-hmm. there was great. But my favorite sequence was the big, I guess the first big fight sequence at the Guggenheim in the mm. art museum with all the art references yeah. everywhere. And is that a Banksy and all that? I thought that was a great bit. Loved mm-hmm. it. The art history nerd in me was going nuts. Kept looking for art references throughout the entire movie. So mm-hmm. not many comic book movies can be like, is there going to be a Shepard Fairey or a Roy Lichtenstein, like something it's going to pop up here, which I thought was, again, for the people that made this, they are thinking on that level. So I love that. The appreciation for like the people that pave the street that they're walking on. So that's mm-hmm. important.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Anything for you, Richard? Any scene or sequence that stands out?
Love all the Spider-Punk stuff. I love, like I said, I love the Yorma, the quick renaissance Spider-Man yeah. stuff. Yeah, those two stuck out to me. It really walks the line too of like great. Those are great examples of like hilarious but poignant iterations of the character.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I thought it was a smart choice to open with a full Gwen sequence to kind of start this one off. And instead of just jumping straight back into Miles's life, we get to see what's going on with her. Love the Vulture scene. I thought that was just a great appetizer for everything that's to come with the various Spider-Man mm. and Nemesis and stuff. That was really funny. And great mix too of jokes for my kid and jokes for me too, which is fun. It's nice to have that going on. Yeah, Spider HQ is great. I'm with you too. The Mumbatan, that was such a cool design and structure for that whole world was awesome. Really love that.
What did you think about the canon thing? I don't know if it's getting into spoilers. It might be. So spoilers coming up, but there's a big scene and they make fun of it. They're like, all right, let's do the pointer scene thing. And in this where they talk about, okay, Miles, if you want to be Spider-Man, this happens in every Spider-Man's life, right? These certain events, which it was like the first time I had pulled back and said, wow, that's right. Every iteration of Spider-Man has had like these three pillars of events, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's a big death. Yep. It's a bitten by a spider, and it's like a love that mm-hmm. you can't save or whatever it is. And I loved that. I loved how they brought that into like, okay, if you want to be Spider-Man, this person has to die because that's just the way it is when you're Spider-Man. Yeah. It's like, man, that is tough, but also like Just super simple.
Right. Yeah, we talked off the bat kind of about the multiverse stuff and our fatigue there. This is the example of how to do it right, I think. Not just the fun elements, but like making it a plot point that matters and that brings some understanding or like, because I had the same thought, Ken. I was like, I know that these are the beats because we've seen Spider-Man rebooted, you know, four or five times right. in our lifetimes. But it isn't as tired to me for whatever reason as Batman's parents getting killed and the pearls falling and all this kind of stuff. And I thought it was a great way to utilize the multiverse medium and to make it have some meaning and some stakes that aren't just, well, now we can bring back Vulture or whatever else. I thought that was a really... That's one of the smarter parts of the plotting of this movie. Maybe these part is the smartest part of the plotting. It gives you something and really draws something out of using this multiverse thing. So I love that. I thought it was great. Action sequences were all really good and fun. I think the two, for me, like the best scenes of the movie were... The upside down, he and Gwen talking to each other upside down on the building. That was, just looked so cool and was really done well. But also, it's just a really beautifully written scene. And then him talking to his mom on the water tower thing on the top of the building.
That one to me looked like performance capture or motion capture. I'll have to watch that one again, but like in the moment, I'm like, this animation's too good to be animation almost. It felt that way.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The first movie did a great job of highlighting Miles's relationship with his dad. And then this one was way more about his mom. And I, in some ways, because when we get down to the end of it, you see it makes a really strong point about who Miles in the other world becomes without his dad, and so then that kind of comes full circle. But I really enjoyed that scene between him and his mom and that interaction, and again just goes back to this kind of Pixarian sort of understanding of how to do real life things and real conversations and organic conversations and stuff in an animated movie about a bunch of Spider-Men. It was a very touching, beautifully written sequence, and I was glad to see you get an opportunity to see him interact with his mom, not just with his dad, as I expect, obviously, given what we know now about like the whole consequences of the multiverse and this is what happens if you're Spider-Man and stuff. The third movie will be so much more about him and his dad. So it was really nice to have that stop down to give Rio, is the mom's name, Rio and him some time together. And it was a really touching. Of course, I was getting choked up and whatnot. It was really very well done in that stuff. I love that.
Yeah, the uncle stuff was my favorite stuff from the first movie. I'm glad they brought that back.
Yeah, for sure. And that goes to the voice casting here. I mean... We're adding Daniel Kaluuya. We've got Oscar Isaac. Schwartzman, I thought, was great. He's only in it for 10 minutes. And again, the next one will get a lot more of Spot and Jason Schwartzman. But I thoroughly enjoyed his bit. I'm glad we got Mahershala Ali back. Yep. You know, Sandberg's always fun. And then it just keeps going. I mean, they added a whole bunch of talented voice casts, and then even Donald Glover showing up, that was a fun bit as well. But
why exactly was that? What it was project. Was it because he wants to play Miles Morales? Is that why they put him in this?
He played, if you remember in Homecoming, when he's in that character, I believe,
was that the character he's in this?
That's Prowler in that universe, or will become Prowler.
Oh, got it.
In another, you know, in a different universe.
Writing it down. Become
Prowler. Yeah.
Keep it. Yeah. I'm gonna do
okay.
I'm gonna look like the guy in Memento with my tattoos keeping up.
I knew he popped up, and I remembered he popped up in that, but I didn't know if it was the same character or if they're like, oh, this is a new character, Donald Glover, or if they just put him in there because I think that was a conversation when Into the Spider-Verse came out, didn't he put out there, like, I want to play Miles Morales, or I've been wanting to play him for a while, or some
there's
like
always
that.
Been rumors of him as Miles, and there's various reasons why that hasn't happened, partly because he's a grown man.
Yeah,
Miles,
you'd have to do, like, an adult version of Spider-Man. So they can maybe do in the MCU. I think that might be. But he's already in the MCU as a different character. Right. But I thought Haley Steinfeld was excellent.
She rules.
She's great. Yeah.
I mean, that stuck out to me as the best voice performance.
She's outstanding. And she blends so well with... She blends well with Wishamik Moore. She blends really well with Jake Johnson. That their chemistry, voice chemistry or whatever is great. It was fun to see those
people say that about us
interact more. I know
they're always talking about our voice chemistry. Yeah,
I was like, gosh, the voice chemistry on this show, it's unbelievable. They said some really stupid stuff, but the voice chemistry is just off the charts. Yeah, Haley Steinfeld's she's pretty impressive. She's kind of
and a good actor.
I think she can kind of do whatever she wants to at this point. She's really good.
Yeah, and the curious lack of Post Malone in this movie. Could have used more posty.
I think that was one area where it's a little lesser than the first one. The first one, the soundtrack is incredible, and Posty does a really good job with his songs on that. Every kid I know is still kind of obsessed with that song. And so this one's a little bit lower, I think, from on the soundtrack standpoint, but that's fine. That's a small criticism. Yeah. Maybe he'll play a Spider-Man in the third one, you know? Maybe he'll pop back up.
Let's get to some Twitter questions here, Brian. I have a few from our Twitter. If you want to follow us at Mad About Movies and send us your thoughts and or opinions on movies, we appreciate those, and we will, of course, shout them out. And if you're a VIP, you get the front of the line for those if you want to do that. So speaking of VIP, Manasco asks, opinion on having on not having part one in the title, I guess he meant to say. Because this was supposed to be part one. Opinions on it ending on a cliffhanger, because I saw it was currently the highest rated movie on Letterboxd. And I was surprised at that because of how it ends, because it doesn't really end it does leave people wanting more. So I'm surprised more people didn't feel like it was great, but I wish it would have ended, better or different. Yeah. Maybe because we know we're getting another one that we'll give it the benefit of the doubt, but yeah.
I think they probably could have did a slightly better job of communicating this is without putting part one in the title, which I totally understand why they don't want to do that. It maybe could have been handled a little bit better to let people know there's another one coming. Not just another Spider-Verse movie, but a true part two to this thing is coming in 9 months or whatever. It was a little more... I felt like just about everybody went into like Infinity War knowing that this is essentially a part one and we're going to get the second part of it in a year. And this one I don't think was quite as... I don't know that everybody knew that this was... I'll tell you, my kid was pissed. Coop and I took two of his buddies to go see this with us, and it ended, and they all were like, "That what? Are you serious?" And we're like going crazy of like, "Trash! This is trash!" And then I was like, "I mean, you guys really like the movie, right? Yes, but just that's a terrible cliffhanger."
I was a little surprised they were that bold with it. To be honest, I was like, "Wow, they really did that."
Yeah. So you get why they don't want to do a part one in the title of the movie, especially as titles of movies get longer and longer, and there's how many semicolons can we have in a movie title? But maybe it could have been done a little bit better to make sure that everybody knows going in this is ending on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, 100%. Joe says it was great. Sony and DreamWorks are doing such awesome stuff right now. Disney and Pixar need to put in some work to catch up. That's a great point, and one of my last points was there's some awesome animation out there, right? This isn't the first movie to do really incredible animation. It's just that It's the first one to first major studio to put this style of animation on a major property, right? There's a reason that Encanto is animated the way it is, because they want to maximize the dollars, and the aesthetic that was established by Pixar with Toy Story and some of their other stuff has been proven to be like the aesthetic that is the most universal for people to get behind when it comes to CG animation, which is why that style is so prominent across every major company, right? So for a studio to say, yeah, we'll do Spider-Man, but you know what? Go nuts. Go take some risks. Go do it. Go make it like a short film, you know, like some of the stuff you see. If you want to see some great animation, just go watch the Oscar-nominated short films every year in animation. Like, they're doing some crazy stuff like this, but it's just never been done with a big property, with a blockbuster. And sometimes the biggest successes come from the biggest risks. And this is a case of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, I think we'd all like to see Disney take a few more chances with some of this, be a little more ambitious with some of the stuff that they're doing. Like, when Puss in Boots has better animation than a lot of what we're getting out of.
Yeah.
And I mean, the second Puss in Boots was an incredible movie, like one that had no business being as good as it was. But part of why it was so good was the animation style was unreal, and never would have expected that when that movie was announced. So
did you see the trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yep.
That was the first time I'd seen that. That looks freaking cool. It looks like a freaking oil painting. It's great.
Yeah. I think that legitimately has a chance to kind of reinvigorate that entire franchise and world. I think you're going to have kids that suddenly care about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles again that haven't really previously cared about it. And that's awesome. That's a great thing.
Did this make you cry, Brian?
Of course.
Add it to the list.
The really father, son, mother, son, that kind of stuff always gets me. The Jake Johnson, Peter Parker, his interactions with Miles and stuff. I love that version of Peter Parker or a Spider-Man, and those interactions are great too. But the dialogue between him and his mom, and then at parts between him and his dad and his uncle is really good and emotional, but without being, I think at least it's not emotional terrorism. It's just very organic. And that's what always gets me at least a little bit. So, it was very, very well done. Any last thoughts before we grade this thing out?
No, I'm excited for the next one. Apparently, it's called Beyond the Spider-Verse.
It is, yeah. If you stay towards the end, there wasn't a post-credit, but there was about halfway through the credits, I think, it popped up, Spider-Man will return in Beyond the Spider-Verse. So I believe that is the end of March next year. So about a 9-month wait, which is nice. No, 5 years at least, so. So there's that. Okay, let's grade this thing out. Richard, I'm coming to you first, my friend.
Solid A out of me, man. Really enjoyed it. Excited for the next one. It's what, next year?
Yeah, I think end of March.
So not 5 years? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. A from Richard for an animated movie. That's really like an A++.
Yeah, so for sure.
It's really good.
Definitely.
It's really good. Kent, where are you?
Yeah, I'm at an A+ for this one. I mean, this one it was excellent. So all I can say, hard, can't really find a fault with it. So A+.
Okay. Yeah. I'm right between an A and an A+. I feel like it's probably going to come up to an A+ over the course of the year. I think I like the first one a little, just slightly better than this, but I thought Kingpin was a really
good. Yeah, I love Kingpin.
Was a better, this really isn't about the villain, because that will be so much more of the third movie. Kingpin really brought something, I thought, in into the Spider-Verse that maybe this one's lacking a little bit, but also am really aware of when we see the second part of this, it may bring this up a bit, just because you kind of know, you're going to know what the ending point is. It's not a full and complete by any means, but there's at least a little bit kind of lingering out there. I feel like Infinity War is better after having seen Endgame, for me at least, And so maybe that's the same experience here. So I'll go strong A, but may lean to bringing it up to an A plus by the end of the year. Really great and inventive. Really enjoyed this quite a bit. So cool. Three A's. That's good. We like that. That's a good way to kind of kick off the summer months. I don't know how many more movies we're going to get like that this summer, unfortunately, but we'll see. See how it goes. Before we get out of here, let's do a quick weekly recommend.
Weekly recommends.
Kent, what you got for us, bud?
Yeah, I'll recommend another movie that is mentioned in the Tarantino book, Brian De Palma's Sisters. You guys seen this one?
Yeah.
I've not seen that one.
No, you have, Richard. Yeah, this one's...
I have. Back in the Borders days when I would just watch tons of movies.
Yeah, this is a Criterion collection one. Not a lot of big movie stars in it. Margot Kidder is probably the biggest movie star in it, but it's just a great showcase for De Palma and his Hitchcock influence back in this time when he decided, okay, I want to kind of take over where Hitch has left off.
It's a
so
big
to speak.
Little Steven favorite, by the way.
Is it?
Producer
our,
Steven.
Our producer. Loves it. That's good. Well, this one's definitely worth checking out. The section of the book where he talks about De Palma and the Hollywood movie brat guys, the Spielberg, you know, Coppola, all that is just some of the best movie commentary reading I've ever read. I was just like, wow, this is like speaking directly into my soul. So definitely check that out in the middle of the Tarantino book. But this movie's good on its own. Sisters, a little 90-minute horror thriller, Hitchcockian type of movie that is worth checking out. So Criterion Collection, Sisters.
Nice.
There you go.
I got to read this book.
Yeah, the book is excellent.
Read the book. All right, Richard, where are we at? What's your weekly recommend?
Yeah, mine's a book that turned into a movie. That movie I like a lot. I never read the book. My wife and I are doing things where we're reading each other's like favorite stuff this year.
Nice.
So I'm reading Gone Girl.
Oh, nice.
And the book's really, it's not as like pulpy as I thought it was. It's a very good novel. And Gillian Flynn writes like the male pop culture journalist so well. It's really funny. Like, you know, women have to deal with this far more than men ever have to. But like, you know, like I'm sure women are like nodding their heads, like dudes that write female characters that are like terrible. It's not at all how they think about it, right? Mm-hmm. But the Nick Dunn character, the Affleck character in the movie, he's like a, you know, like an Entertainment Weekly writer before he gets laid off during the last recession. Mm. And he like thinks and writes exactly. I mean, she just knows that dude so well. She writes it so well. That character is so dead on. Nice. And then you have the great. Yeah, Brian, I actually think you would love this book.
Cool.
I know you're a big Fincher guy and you liked but not loved the movie. But like, no, it's a really I'm like blown away at how good this is, especially going back and forth with they both narrate it and go back and forth. It's cool.
Nice.
Me and my wife did that exact same thing a couple of years ago. She's like, oh, read this book. It's my favorite. And I'll read one of yours. Hers was 100 Years of Solitude, Richard.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So over my head. Like,
yeah, the magical realism.
This is what happens when you marry somebody with like more brain cells than you. It's like, yeah, you're, things get real, really quick.
I haven't decided what I'm going to assign Sarah yet. Probably, yeah. I think I can really come at her with something really dense.
Give her Infinite Jest.
Yeah, that one's not that bad. It's just
it's just super long.
I think. Yeah. I can go there. Ulysses.
Do that.
Yeah. The Book of Basketball would be hilarious. What'd you think of the pyramid?
Give me notes on the pyramid, please.
Yeah.
He way overrated Kevin McHale, right? She's just like, I don't know.
Have any kind of, yeah. Talk about the Bernard King piece. You know, in person with my dad, he was great.
You cue her in and get her in on the Simmons, the text thread that we have that's just dedicated to making fun of Bill Simmons, I think.
Oh, chicken parm. She does make a good chicken parm. So.
Well, she's a third Italian, so.
That's right.
Nice. Okay. How about you, Brian? Let me check that out. I'm going to recommend an album that came out a couple of weeks ago. It's by one of one of our favorites here on the show. It's Spectral Lines by Josh Ritter.
Yeah, it's
one of
good.
The great songwriters of his generation. It's been out for about a month. I hadn't had a chance to listen to it until the last couple of days, and it's very good. I would say first couple of listens, I don't know where you're at on this, Arby. It's lesser than the last couple albums for me, but it's still he's a lyrical genius, and Rich and I both have seen this guy in concert. His band rules.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, very good band that I think kind of is the greatness of the band kind of gets lost in all the other stuff that he does. So I really like the album. If you listen to it and you're like, yeah, this is pretty good, then there's five other albums that you can go back and listen to, and you'll be like, holy cow, these are incredible. So I kind of weirdly see it, Richard, as like almost like an entry point on Josh Ritter's stuff for me, even though it's, I don't know, what's his 10th album, something like that.
Yeah.
So, but it's a good starter place
if
nothing else. So I dig it.
Cool. So he's getting close to a top three Ritter.
Sure.
Yeah. One more album, maybe.
Jason,
one
more album, Josh and Kristen. I mean, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Could get there soon. All right. Well, this has been fun. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard. Guess what? There's more of this. I can't even imagine.
Me either.
Why anyone would want to listen to this. But if you've made it this far, then we must be doing something right. So once you go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP, sign up for that VIP feed. It's $5 a month. You'll get access to another episode every single week. We get bonus episodes as well. And then we have this huge back catalog of literally hundreds of episodes on the VIP feed as well. You can get into, usually it's a throwback or a retrospective. This week we were talking about Demolition Man, Sly Stallone, Wesley Snipes. Should be a fun combo. There's also a little bonus stuff. I think by the end of this week, maybe early next week, Batman Shane and a couple of the our MamFam VIP friends are going to do a Succession episode. Put that out as well in the VIP. So check that out, Mad About Movies.
Which Succession character is that Succession episode?
I think it's...
Total Kendall, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, they're all Kendalls. Gosh, I'm so glad the show's over. I'm glad that they are going to step in and do this, because I do think that it's great to have an episode on this. It was a huge cultural touch point for online people, you know?
I like the show, but I mean, yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Yeah, that's there strong.
We got to do it as a draft.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. That's
good. All right. Thank you so much for being here. Stay safe, and we'll see you at the same.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.